Hi, everybody. Thanks for being here. Do you realize that it's the second to the last of these tutorials? Let me see. 2 weeks from today will be the ninth tutorial, so we've actually been at this for about 16 weeks now? I can't even do the math. But we're getting very, very close to our time together. I mean, it's been pretty crazy around the office with last-minute details, except everything is really going spectacularly well, and more exciting things are coming up every day, and it's just one of those times where it feels like it's coming down the home stretch, and I hope that when you all arrive at the conference, you'll be able to experience the reasons for some of the excitement that we're feeling here as the planning team. We've been in communication with a lot of you who have registered for the conference. We've been in constant communication with members of the convening organizations who are serving as facilitators for the working groups on site. So there's a tremendous amount of participation in this event, and your participation on these calls is a big contributor to why we believe that when we all end up together and feel prepared and know each other a little bit, but also have been reviewing and getting a good sense of the themes and the issues that we're going to be discussing, that it's really going to make a difference. It'll feel different than it normally feels when we go to conferences like this and just show up and have a good time and get some work done, but then go home and feel as if we were never there in the first place. So it's all coming together. So today we'll start in on our, today we're looking at the spiritual tradition of New Thought. Jim Kenney is here, of course. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Barbara.
And hi. Also joining us today, I invited the Reverend Dr. Peggy Price and Dr. Stephen Albert, both of whom are colleagues of mine and well-versed in the New Thought tradition. I invited them on the call today to talk about New Thought a little bit. So hi, Peggy and Steve.
Hello there, Barbara. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Barbara. Hi, good to be here.
Yeah. And that we were listening to the audio recordings of Reverend Michael Beck, Bernard Beckwith, and Sister Joan Chittister today. So it's the theme we're dealing with is healing, peace, and gender equity. I don't think it's too ironic that those all come together in the course of putting together this tutorial. And all the material is interesting. So I was thinking that we'll follow suit, and the first thing that we'll do today is find out if there's somebody who would like to start us off with a centering prayer or a short meditation of some sort. Is there anyone here that would offer to do that? You can raise your hand by pressing 1 on the telephone keypad. Oh, my cat just moaned. Maybe she wants to do it. Okay, then maybe I think I'm going to invite Peggy, if you don't mind doing it for us today. That would be great.
All right. Thank you, Barbara. I'd be happy to. And so let's just join together, recognizing that there is only one life, and that life is God's life. And that life is perfect, and that life is our life right now. These words are very commonly used in New Thought prayer, and so we bring them to our awareness today, knowing that truly God is all there is in its many different names and many different expressions. And that we, as we join together here today, we come together to recognize these universal truths, that we are all one, and that we are all one in the same life. And so we join together in consciousness, we join together with open minds and hearts, as we let this time together begin, knowing it is good and very good, and so it is. Amen.
Thank you very much, Peggy. So I think I want to take one moment here, not for too long, but just to take any general questions from the people on the call about the conference. If it's about some specific personal logistics, just email me.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Barbara. That's a very good idea.
But if anybody has any questions at this point that also might be relevant to some of the other callers, you go ahead and raise your hand. Hopefully we've prepared you so well that nobody will have any questions. Oop, here was one, Julie Baker. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I understand this whole second axial error and the evolution we're going through, but I've been hearing the term sea change.
Mm-hmm.
Does everyone but me know what that means?
I don't think so, except it's a pet subject of my colleague Jim Kenny, and I bet that he would be happy to give you an overview of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, the reason that thanks for asking, and I'll send you the check later in the week. Sea change is actually my term, and it's a term that I use in my book, which is somewhere on the website. Anyway, it's called Thriving in the Cross Current, and sea change is my own term for the dramatic acceleration of cultural evolution that we're going through right now. And in a nutshell, here's the idea. From time to time, human culture experiences a sea change. A sea change is a rapid acceleration in the progressive shift of the values that shape that culture. And in my book, I talk about a number of sea changes. I only identify four. One could identify five or ten or however many, but the fourth is the one that we're in right now, and it is essentially a period in which our cultural values are moving dramatically, are accelerating dramatically in the direction of a closer fit with reality. That's really the key. So we move closer to reality with respect to our views on gender equity. We've gotten over slavery. We're moving past the idea of gender inequity. We're moving away from racialism. We're moving away from the idea of ecological exploitation. And above all, probably, we're moving away from the idea of we're moving towards cultural acceptance and embrace of social and economic justice and human rights. So it's a large progressive agenda, and sea change means that once in a blue moon, culture seems to engage in that perfect storm when everything seems to come together. And I just want to add one more thing, that I believe very strongly that as we move closer to an ecological engagement with the planet, it's almost impossible not to move closer to an engagement with human rights and gender equity. Sea change.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim. That's a good overview. I know that a lot of the people that I've been working with and in our community are noticing that there's a kind of a shift going on in our culture right now, and a lot of things are changing, and people are feeling it in their personal lives, and they're seeing it in society. And, in fact, that's a way that we've structured our conference, because we wanted to take a good, deep, and systematic look at what Jim calls sea change, what other people are referring to as a kind of shift in conscious evolution. So we'll get more into that as we get into our conference. But right now I think we should talk. Actually, this is the time when we put each other, we put ourselves into some small groups and just have a little conversation. So I think that we should do that again. Megan's going to put us into smaller groups, and in those groups, you'll have a chance to just introduce yourself. Maybe you'll find that you're with people that you've been with before, and maybe you'll find yourself meeting some new people who will be at the conference. But just, facilitate yourselves. At this point, we're not going to do much but give you a bell every couple minutes so that we stay on track, and we'll see you back here in the main room in about, 5 or 6 minutes. Okay, see you later.
You are now in a breakout. Please begin.
Okay, good. So we're all back, and I hope that that was a good experience for you all. We're going to go right into our tutorial today then, and as we said before, the tradition, the spiritual tradition that we're taking a look at today, in the past we've looked at Buddhism, Hinduism, Judaism, Jainism, there was a long list of traditions we've studied in the past 7 weeks, and now we're taking a look at the New Thought tradition today, and Jim is going to go and sort of lead off the discussion the way we normally do by looking at the materials on the website and going through those. So, Jim, take it away.
Okay. What we have done in general is to read a kind of a blurb about the tradition and then make a statement about the excellence of the tradition. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, the idea of the excellence comes from a scholar of interreligious thought named Fritjof Schuon, who wrote in a book called The Transcendent Unity of Religions in 1976 that every religion is superior to every other by virtue of something it does best. So, anyway, here's New Thought, a spiritually motivated way of life that embraces the ancient wisdom traditions of East and West. It embodies the belief that consciousness is elementally creative, reciprocates thought, and thereby shapes but does not determine what becomes manifest in our experience. I think that's worth repeating. It embodies the belief that consciousness is elementally creative. It reciprocates thought and thereby shapes but does not determine what becomes manifest in our experience. New Thought principles reflect a universal conviction that the community of all life is sacred. Its practices of meditation and prayer enhance a worldview promoting reverence for and service to humanity and planet Earth. New Thought is committed to global healing through personal transformation, community building, interfaith, intercultural and interdisciplinary understanding, and compassionate action. I'm sorry, I'm reading from tiny, tiny print here. The excellence of the New Thought tradition is that there is an inherent, and I love this, an inherent perfection and sacred worth in the universe, all of creation, and every individual. The community of all life is interconnected and interdependent. Consciousness is infinitely created. We create our experience through our thoughts and feelings. Human consciousness is ever evolving into higher states of awareness. For each of the traditions that we've discussed, we've talked about a master story. Not the master story, but a master story. A classic story that embodies the essential thought of the tradition. And for New Thought, the master story is co-creation and with the divine. We also ask the question about ritual pattern. What's an essential ritual pattern? Not the, but what is an essential ritual pattern? And here, it's applying the science of mind to everyday life. And the ethical norm, consciousness creates according to divine purpose. So now, because we have Steve and Peggy with us today, Barbara, will you turn it over, introduce them and turn it over to them to tell us more about New Thought?
I certainly will. Thank you. Because the Association for Global New Thought is one of the co-conveners for this conference, we have the privilege and the enjoyment of having many New Thought ministers and practitioners and people from New Thought communities are attending, and many of them are part of our facilitation team on site. Many of them have been part of these tutorials. And so today I invited two of my friends and colleagues, Reverend Dr. Peggy Price and Dr. Stephen Albert to teach a little bit about their understandings of New Thought and their longer experience than mine and Jim's. So I just wanted to ask Peggy and Steve to maybe a good place to start would be to respond a little bit, just introduce yourselves, you know, briefly, and then respond a little bit to the material that Jim just read to the group. So either one of you can begin. It's fine with me how this works.
Okay. Well, I'd be glad to start. I found New Thought after many years in traditional Christianity and feeling myself drawn toward a broader way of thinking and believing than what I could find in a traditional Christian church. And I think the first thing that really touched me the most when I started to attend a New Thought church was just the feeling of love and acceptance that was present there. And the very first time in my life that I'd ever heard the words, "You are whole, perfect, and complete," which is very different from the feeling of sinfulness that one can get from a traditional church. Not that there's anything wrong with people having that belief, because it is their belief, but I found for me it was becoming very painful to think of myself that way. And so for me, that was the first part of it. And then to discover the idea of our beliefs outpicturing our experience was also new to me. But as I thought about it, I began to realize more and more that my life up until that time had been an outpicturing of my belief, and it really wasn't the life I wanted. So for me, New Thought, this wonderful gift of the idea of this inherent perfection and sacred worth in everything, I love to view it as we live in a unified field of pure love, and that love is that divine love, and that awareness allows us to live our lives from that place rather than from a place of fear. And now I'm going to be quiet and let Steve talk.
Oh, boy. Thank
you. Very nice. Thanks.
My background was I was brought into a Jewish home, and in the middle of my teen years, I discovered the Kabbalah and went to my rabbi and said I'd like to study it, and he told me I wasn't allowed. And as soon as you tell a teenage kid you can't do something, obviously he goes and does it, but away from the synagogue. And so for years I studied and began practicing meditation and a variety of other things that I was teaching at universities, and I've been teaching since, I don't know, 1975. And there's just such depth within New Thought that I didn't learn about until 1990. I was in Chicago at the Oak Park Church, a Unity Church, and I heard this man stand up and tell me, exactly like Peggy mentioned, many of the truths that New Thought believes, and I said, but that's what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff that I've been teaching since the late 70s. How can there be a group that gets together and actually accentuates all those points about meditation and dreams and understanding the power within? And then through that time, went through a variety of educational parts within Unity and became the first minister of a Unity church here in San Diego. And the beauty was that we talk about the divine power of God within us, and that power is within each one of us. Unfortunately, some people take that to mean that no matter who we meet and what they're doing, whether it's hurting or not, they are a God being. Well, they may be, but they don't know it. And so I like to say that we honor and respect all the faiths, all the cultures, all the creeds, but we also look at people who believe that spiritual equity and human rights belongs to everyone, which is much of what we might be talking about tonight. When you're looking at people, we look at them and say, you're God in form, and we love you and we respect you, and we want to learn from you as we hope you might want to learn from us. But when we see somebody who is hurting and hurting others and causing stress, much like what this past movie, the Islam movie did, you've got to step up and say, this is wrong.
All right.
And
I'd like to step in and just say that because we recognize our oneness with all of life, with all beings and all life and with the entire universe, then what we give out is what we experience. We live in a reciprocal universe. And at the same time, if harm is done to another, it is done to all. So that kind of consciousness really requires us to continually move to a place of higher awareness where we practice these universal principles of love and oneness and wholeness and forgiveness and peace as our daily practice, as our daily life. And it's a transformative teaching. It is powerfully transformative.
Yeah. And we encourage people to transform. That just because you are where you are right now and you're not happy with your life, you've got the ability within you to awaken to a much greater, active, happy, prosperous life. And we hope that everybody would do that for the good of everybody. And so much of the actions that we take in New Thought are for the good of everyone. Association for Global New Thought has just done so many programs that the world is being involved in, not just a few individuals here and there, that God is love.
Yeah.
And we see that in the relationships, in each person, and every action that gets taken.
Well, great. That's a good overview. Do we have any questions from the participants on the call about anything that has been said about New Thought up until this point? Not just questions, but any comments that people might want to make? Okay.
I have one. This is Jim. I'd just like to thank both Peggy and Stephen for their comments, and I'd really like to highlight what Stephen said about spiritual equity.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was very, very powerful, and I really appreciate that. I'm really glad that he brought up and I'm sorry, I just dropped my phone and got disconnected for a moment. And Peggy pointed us back toward what's been going on in the Middle East and the spiritual hatred as opposed to spiritual equity. I just thought that was very powerful, and I appreciate that very much, Peggy and Stephen. Thank you. I thought that was extremely eloquent.
Thank you.
And thank you, both of you, for joining in today. And please feel free to enter into the discussion if anything else comes up, because we're hoping this to be a conversation. I say the same thing to all of you on the call, that in a month or less, when we're in Rome together, we'll all be engaged in this conversation together. It's not the kind of conference where you'll be listening to. Certainly, you'll be listening to people who are very expert and wise, but they won't be there looking at you as a passive audience. It'll be very interactive, and so I'm looking forward to hearing what that shapes up into. So, Jim, you think maybe we should move right on now to the two different audio interviews that were a part of the tutorial this week?
Sure. Why don't you go ahead with Michael?
Yeah, one of the recordings, I don't know how many of you had time to listen to the audio recordings that are on the website, but one, the subject today being having to do also with healing, one of the recordings was by the president of AG&T, Reverend Dr. Michael Beckwith of the Agape International Center in Los Angeles, and a couple of things struck me about his interview. I certainly am not going to go through the whole thing. There was a lot of content in there. But he was saying that historically, New Thought views healing as a way of proving spiritual principles by manifesting immediate feedback. So, in other words, New Thought principles support that there is a kind of direct proof for the power of prayer. It's not based on blind faith, but it's based on truth of that operate on universal principles, that we have the ability not to create but to reveal the underlying unbroken and perfect wholeness that is God, and that is God not just in us but as us. So there are other religions, like the Hindus might call it Maya, traditions that determine the notion of truth from the notion of illusion or falsehood, or the appearance of truth in reality rather than the truth itself underneath that illusion. Michael also said something about, in present time, New Thought believes in living daily spirituality by participating fully in life and society. So he spoke a little bit about healing in terms of healing the body temple, but not just that, also the body politic, also healing toward a kind and just global society, healing in order to articulate a better vision of humanity that, once we have articulated and embraced this vision, can actually reveal the underlying truth. Do Jim or my colleagues, does anyone want to comment a little bit about those concepts?
Well, I'm sure lots of people want to comment, but let me jump in, this Jim, and say that the idea, I think what one of the most important things Michael said pointed to the idea of the spiritual path as a testable hypothesis. And I really want to say that strongly. It's a testable hypothesis. The Buddha used to say that the Dharma is the Sanskrit word that just means the teaching or the way. And he would say the Dharma is an ahipasika thing. And you'll bear with me, this is my favorite Sanskrit word. If we had a different conversation, I'd give you a different favorite Sanskrit word. But ahi means come this way. You might gesture to a group of children and say, ahi, ahi. And then pasi means open your eyes and see, pasi. So ahi, pasi, and then the ka at the end just makes it an adjective. So an ahi, pasika kind of thing is a come and see thing. And so the Buddha always said the Dharma is a come and see thing. In other words, don't believe anything I say just because they said I said it. And that's exactly what Michael said in that interview, that New Thought brings to spirituality an ahipasika kind of quality. Come in, jump in the water, test it out, see if it works for you. And I think that's absolutely critical, moving from the dogmatic to the experiential. I think that's really critical, and I think it's actually one of the beautiful parts about New Thought.
Yeah, and I'd like to add that is one of the things that is absolutely wonderful about New Thought, is that we don't have dogma. In fact, a lot of times people will say, well, what does New Thought have to say about this particular condition or social issue? And the answer is, well, that's up to you to decide for yourself. You know, it's about using your own mind and your own consciousness. How do you apply these principles to that situation? And your answer may not be the same as mine. So our teaching does not require that we follow a certain set of dogmatic rules. Mm-hmm. The most important thing we can do every day is pray. That's the one thing I think probably above all that it would encourage us to do.
Yeah. This is Steve. One of the things that I love about New Thought is how the ministers grow within the faith, and that is many of them come from different backgrounds, whether it be Christian, Jewish, Native American, whatever, and they bring into their particular center the background from their background, and that's what makes it different, as you were just saying. everyone's a little bit different. They see things from a different vantage point. And when a new person comes into new thought and says, you know, I tried that, but it's not really what I was looking for, you can almost say to them, well, go down the street and try the other one. And all of a sudden, they become adherents there. Because that person comes from a different background and emphasizes different things in a way that that person is open to.
Yeah, thank you both. I just wanted to quickly summarize and conclude with the with Michael's audio interview, and then we're going to move on to Sister Joan Chittister, and Jim's going to talk about that. But I did want to summarize that one of the main points that Michael Beckwith made was this point that we hold stewardship over our own thinking, and that means that we cannot ever feel like victims or passive recipients of a life we are somehow separate from, because we are interacting and creating our own perception of reality at all times. So this means that our experience is not shaped by external circumstances alone, but by our participation in and perception of the conditions that we face. So in a sense, and he pointed out, that we're not really attached to the outcomes, but that outcome forms itself around our intentions, choices, behavior, conviction. And if that is if that conviction is clean and open to the highest good, our intentions will stay in alignment with the force of this wholeness. So in a sense, there's nothing about New Thought and New Thought prayer and philosophy that's very different than the way that prayer and spiritual practice are perceived in other traditions. But there's also an aspect of viewing these practices as a technology, that we can be intentional about how our own consciousness shapes our experience of reality, and that we can certainly practice the way this affects our lives. And so that's very important in today's times, how we apply this to this practice to be of genuine service to others and to the challenges that we face in our world as a whole. So that, you know, that almost brings us full circle to the beginning of our conversation where Jim was talking about sea change. We actually have the ability to participate in these circumstances and not just be the passive recipients of them.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you to both of you, and I think that in the service of time we should ask Jim to move on and talk to us a little bit about Joan Chittister and her interview.
Well, I'm happy to do that, and I'm happy especially because Joan is one of my dearest friends in the world, and one of the things that's really neat about our conversation over the last several weeks is that almost everyone we have talked about, almost all the interviews we've listened to, are from people who will actually be joining us in Italy, and Michael, of course, will be there, and Joan Chittister will be there. And our theme, let me just remind you, our theme tonight is healing and peace and gender equity. Gender equity. I always like when I talk to audiences, I know this is not necessary with your group, but let me say it. People who are new to the conversation talk about gender equality, and people who have been in the conversation for a long time talk about gender equity. And I'll just throw that out there and let you mull it over on your own time. But here's my favorite line from Joan. And she says simply that, yeah, we're talking about gender equity, not gender equality, but gender equity. The two genders are different in dramatic ways, and yet they bring the same amount of energy to the table. And here's what Joan says. She says, let me make this point. Women see things differently. Women do things differently. Women deal with things differently than men. Women around the world are, as a class, other than a few tokens here and there, excluded from the public arena and the process of peacemaking. And how does religion affect that? And that, of course, is one of her big questions. She believes that religion is probably the most important block that keeps women from having an equal place and an equal voice at the table. Joan Chittister, we'll talk about her a little bit later, because it so happens that our special document our special declaration we're talking about is the Chiang Mai Declaration on the relationship, Chiang Mai, Thailand, the declaration on the relationship between women and religion, and John played a very important role in that, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But finally, she says this, it's time for women to refuse to be either victims or executioners. I love that. To refuse to be either victims or executioners, not only to make safe the world, but to make real the religions teach, to, and that's a tricky line, to make real the religions teach.
That's amazing.
The question for us all then today is, why isn't it happening? And what does that have to do with us? The question is that the question and the answer is you. And the answer is crucial now. We need to develop the kind of religion that finally makes us love one another. And I know that both Steve and Peggy will appreciate that. We need to develop the kind of religion that finally makes us love one another. When we need to foil the dictators who are using religion as a prop to keep themselves in power, when we clearly need to release women, the boldest and most unmanageable of all revolutionaries. Love that line. When we need to clearly release women, the boldest and most unmanageable of all revolutionaries. And
is this Sister Joan or you, Jim?
I believe that. I underscore that. Then perhaps we too, this country, the United States too, this government too, the samurais of this time too, that means the ultra males, will finally come to see things differently, do things differently, deal with things differently than we too will come to know the real difference between heaven and hell.
Is this all quote of Joan, that whole section?
Word for word.
Wow, she's so powerful. I see that we have a hand up. I think somebody wants to jump in. Ginger?
Yeah, I just had a quick story that I thought I would share. I think my first one of my first real shocks about the inequity in certainly within police work is I was at a conference in California, and we had several women in policing from all over the world, and a beautiful young woman came up to me from one of the African countries and was interested in a graduate program. And I asked her the question. I said, well, how long have you been in law enforcement and why did you enter the profession? And she told me that she entered law enforcement so that she would not have her clitoris cut out. And I was stunned. And I thought, well, that's an interesting sense of calling, you know, to try and keep all your body parts. But it was just a shock in thinking about the inequity between, you know, in the United States versus other countries and why you would enter this profession. I think it was just the clearest thing for me as far as, you know, when I'm having a bad day, I certainly have all my body parts that are attached here in law enforcement. It just really brought home how much work we have to do.
Yeah, so that's for sure.
As always, Ginger, that's incredible. Thank you.
So,
thank you.
Any other questions or comments at this point, or else Jim, I think, is just going to go on with the Joan's interview, or else maybe it's about, you know, 10 minutes
to
the hour.
No, I think that's all I had about Joan's interview. I mean, I could go on and on about Joan.
But let's talk about the Global Manifesto then, if we don't have any other comments or questions at this time.
Okay. I'm happy to talk about the Chiang Mai Declaration. And the reason I'm happy to talk about it is that I was there, and I was with Joan responsible for the draft. And this was a very interesting conference, a very interesting gathering. And let me remind you all that the reason we're bringing up these various declarations is because at our conference we're going to be talking about a declaration or a charter for spiritual engagement in the 21st century. And so we've raised the question, do these charters, do these declarations, do these big conference statements, do they make a difference? Do they have legs? Do they last? Do they go out into the world and make a difference? And so we've spent a great deal of time and energy thinking about past conferences and declarations and manifestos and so on, and which ones made a big difference. This one actually did. This was the result of a conference that was held by one of our convening organizations, the International Interreligious Peace Council, at Chiang Mai, Thailand, which is in the northern part of Thailand. It's called the Chiang Mai Declaration. This was a conference that brought together several different organizations under the tutelage, if you will, of the Peace Council. But particularly the Center for Health and Social Policy. Center for Health and Social Policy, let me just very quickly say, is a group that worked in several parts of the world to promote, well, health and social policy. And as it happened, they found that wherever they worked, in Thailand, in Malaysia, in Indonesia, in Africa, in other parts of East Asia, it was impossible for them to promote health and social policy without getting involved with women's organizations on the ground. And they came to the Peace Council and said, look, it's really important that we begin to address the whole question of the relationship between women. Now, speaking as an organization that's trying to promote a particular agenda and that is recognizing the importance of women in the promotion of that agenda, and religion, that religion so often throws up the blockade to the engagement of women with, well, especially issues of health and social policy. So this was a gathering of women activists and so on, and religious leaders from a huge variety of traditions. And I have to tell you, just at the outset, that the women who came to this group had an edge, had an attitude, did not expect much from this gathering with religious leaders. Turned out to be very, very progressive and positive and so on. And I was there, and my wife, Seta, who will be with us at the conference and who is on this call, was there as well. Let me just read you a little bit from the Chiang Mai Declaration, which was called Religion and Women, an Agenda for Change. Let me also just preface this by saying that I worked very closely with Joan Chittister to help create this draft. We then brought it to the whole group, and you will all have the opportunity to see Joan Chittister work a group. And she was the chair as we brought this rough draft to the larger group, and they had lots of things to say. And by the end of about a three-hour session, Joan had hammered out this final declaration, and everyone was absolutely thrilled. Anyway, here's the preamble. We, the participants in this conference on women and religion, recognize that contemporary realities have tragic consequences for women's lives. Without a commitment to women's human rights and to the resolution of these tragedies, religions are failing the world. Their own relevance is at stake as they become more and more isolated from the values and needs of their members. It's urgent that religions address these realities. Religions must be consonant with the cultural evolution in which we are all immersed. Religions must no longer tolerate violence against women. Women are alienated from religions that do. We are committed to working towards change, and we call on others, women and men, to join in that task. And there are several sections. One was Women and Globalization, The Problem and the Promise. Women and Religions, The Problem and the Promise. And finally, a conclusion. our experience of coming together as women leaders and religious leaders has convinced us that the religious traditions and the aspirations of women are not in opposition. We are not enemies. On the contrary, we say we share the same commitment to human dignity, social justice, and human rights for all. We therefore commit ourselves and call on other women and other religious leaders to reach out to each other to enhance mutual understanding, support, and cooperation. This can be done on the regional level to expand the consensus achieved here, and at the national level to define concrete joint activities toward advancing women's human rights and well-being. We came together as women and men to explore how the positive powers of religion could be engaged to advance the well-being of women. Indeed, we believe that when women and religious traditions collaborate, a powerful force for advancing women's human rights and leadership will be created. And the date is 2004. Now, one of the questions that we always have is, okay, so what? You know, you have this declaration, it's very articulate and so on, but all it takes is a little bit of wandering around on the web to find that the Chiang Mai Declaration is being invoked, engaged, critiqued, challenged, and enlarged upon all over the place. So this is one more example of one of these conferences that produced a statement that really does have, as I like to say, legs.
Mm-hmm. You know, that was 2004, about 8 years ago, and, you know, I still resonate with the premise that of all the social institutions that we're now experiencing some level of shift or transformation in, that it still is in the sector of institutional religion that women's leadership is not advancing quite as quickly and powerfully as in some other sectors like business and education and science and that sort of thing. And I wonder what's going on at a different level among religious and spiritual women in the world, that there seems to be a sort of an uprising of powerfulness at the grassroots level. I mean, we're seeing it now with the United States women religious in the Catholic Church. We're seeing it with women in spiritual organizations all over the world that aren't really subscribing to a hierarchy in the sense that religious institutions are normally formed around a certain style of hierarchy. But there's a kind of a, as I said, powerfulness that's coming from the collectivity or the collective consciousness of women coming together and doing their work at the spiritual level. So it's almost like a new model for spiritual leadership among women is being expressed now instead of an attempt to create any sort of coup at the hierarchical level. I'm really not experiencing that's the way that change is going to take place.
I'm sorry, I missed that last part. You're not experiencing?
No, I don't think that the change in the relationship between women and religion is going to take place
down.
In terms of challenging hierarchy. I think it's going to take place in a different, with its own
yes.
set of norms.
Not top down, but bottom up.
Yeah,
and
without
doing a name-dropping thing, because I think I made it clear that Joan and I are friends and I've known her for many years, and we were in a gathering in Chiapas in Mexico, and I said, why are you still a nun? Why are you, I mean, you're constantly oppressed by the structural reality of your church and so on, and they're always watching you and telling you to be quiet and don't say this. And so on. Why are you still a nun? And she reached her hand across the table and she said, "Honey, it's over. The boys in Rome don't know it's over, but it's over." And every time I start to think about, are things really going to change? Is there such a thing as cultural evolution? I remember that and realize that. And Barbara, you brought up this the tension between the Vatican, which is actually daring to try to silence it's the Conference of Women Religious, which is the powerful organization of American nuns, of American Roman Catholic sisters, and the idea that they can is beyond belief. The notion that they think they can silence the smartest and most active people in their particular church is bizarre. But we began this conversation with a discussion of sea change, and a very important part of my idea of sea change, of cultural evolution, is that every sea change brings a backlash, and that backlash takes the form of countercultural eddies or whirlpools. And one of the eddies is, of course, the backlash of the structures and centers of power, desperately striking out at a change that they're not going to be able to undo. And I guarantee you, if you have any doubts about how this is all going to work out, and I don't just mean in the Catholic Church, but I mean with regard to women and power and thought and so on, you're going to have the great joy of meeting Joan Chittister.
You know, we have a question. We have a hand up. Christine Hibbard in Colorado. Christine, did you have a question or a comment?
Well, yeah, I just this was a great conversation, and I love listening to both of you, and normally haven't been able to be on these at this time on these talks. But I wanted to just say, Jim, that what as a person who's worked in the field with women in post-war zones and different countries, one of the places I worked was Israel with Israeli-Palestinian women after the Lebanon War. And these were people, they asked me to come in and work with emotional trauma. They were women who were actually peace activists. And, you know, this is just one example that I'm pointing to from all different areas where there's violence in the world. These women came together, and we looked at the Jewish religion, the Muslim religion, and at one point, getting them to really work together and experience each other, if I had given them a gun after they were able to emote and really express their underlying trauma, they would have shot each other. Huh. I'm certain of it. And so there's here we are speaking about the inequality of women wherever they're living with different faiths in whatever country we're coming from. And certainly the Muslims from the West Bank and Gaza, there was a tremendous amount of inequality that they didn't experience as women who were working for peace that the Israeli women did. You see, and all we got them to the point where the underlying emotions were coming out and being worked with. So that's just one point I want to make. And then the second is that
let me jump in, Chris.
Okay,
you're making the point that it was possible to work through.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, and
you're not leaving us with the idea that, left to their own devices, they're all going to shoot each other.
Yeah. No, we did work through things. But the gravity of the situation is
absolutely
what I'm saying. It was
absolutely
so clear that if they did have done, they would have shot each other. It was at that level.
Why?
And
were
I see this all over the world.
I'm just asking a clarifying question. Why do you seem to be saying that the tension was greater on the Israeli side than on the Palestinian side? I think we'd all like to hear a little more.
The inequality was greater for women's rights.
On the Israeli side?
Yeah, no, on the Palestinian side.
All right,
yeah.
I'm sorry, I heard you absolutely differently, and that's what puzzled me.
Okay,
yeah,
oh, I have that, but now it's clear.
Yeah, it's absolutely clear. go ahead and finish your point.
Yeah. So then my second point is to bring forth, one of the things that helped is really bringing forth new thought areas of consciousness to look at within both religions. And that's what brought resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So basic principles that they could adhere to from both religions, from new thought. And it was just so enlightening to these women. So, you know, I'm just talking about an experience. And it was almost like looking at asking them to shift to a different cosmology. Here you go with the sea change. And that was the revolution, the resolution, as well as the working with the emotional trauma and clearing that up with cutting-edge methods.
Thanks, Chris.
That's really uplifting to hear about. I just want to say thanks.
Yeah, and just to respect everyone's time, because we're a few minutes after the hour, you know, the experiences that, you know, Chris has just mentioned a couple that she's had in her lifetime of work. Everyone coming to this conference has experiences of their own that have to do with their lifetime of searching and work. And I'm really looking forward to hearing these stories because they all have so much direct relationship to the topics that we're discussing, the work we're trying to do, and to everyone else's stories. And I think that just revealing all of this sort of collective body of experience will really help us move in the direction of the outcomes that we're looking for. So I just wanted to, you know, wrap up and say that week after next is our last tutorial. It's Module 9. And the topic is on, what is the topic? I wrote down the wrong thing. Well, it doesn't matter. You'll see it on the tutorial. We're studying the two Chinese spiritual traditions, Confucianism and Taoism. And the audio interviews next time are with Chung Liang Al Huang and Reverend Marcus Braybrook. Again, two people that will be with us in Rome. That's really good. And the Global Manifesto we're reviewing for next time is a call to our guiding institutions. Jim, anything to add at this point, or should we let everyone go?
No, just that I'm really happy to be winding up with Al Huang and Marcus Braybrook, and especially with a call to our guiding institutions. It's another document that I feel very close to and love.
Great. So if anybody has any closing questions or remarks, otherwise we'll let you go and see you 2 weeks from tonight for our final tutorial, and then we'll see you all in Rome. So thanks for being here.
This is Jim. I'd like to thank Barbara and Megan for putting together an incredible set of 9 tutorial discussions, and I think we all owe them a great deal of gratitude. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, good night, everybody. See you in a couple weeks.